The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hi, this is Scott.
Pat.
Hey, we got a great program lined up. The first thing we're going to talk about, why you shouldn't always be happy when the stock market goes up. Sounds crazy?
We've got a great guest, John Pally, with Common Estate Planning, Problems, Techniques, and he's going to dish some dirt, some real-life stories.
That's right. And we're also going to talk about, we have got a caller that asked about a required minimum distribution with retirement plans, really how to best manage your retirement plan so you're not paying too much taxes later on. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
And now, for the Financial Times ranked top investment advisor, Hanson McLean, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
And I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here with us on this, whatever day you're listening to. It's broadcast, of course, on the weekends, but yes, a lot of people listen to podcasts.
Whatever day is convenient for you.
That's right. It's all about you at Hanson McLean.
And so I was listening to that intro. So we're Financial Times top something or other.
There you go, Pat.
I didn't know. Did you?
Yes, I know. What do you mean?
I didn't know.
No. We're in the Financial Times top 300.
Oh, I did not know.
Firms.
I did not know that.
I don't know what that really means.
I did not know that.
I think it's probably a good thing. It's a great thing, actually.
It's a super good thing,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, there's only 299 other firms that have made the cut.
So if you you're really slow, you can get to us by weeding through all the other alternatives.
Yes. We're number 184.
Yeah. So there's 183 better choices.
No, I don't think they rank it that way. Number one. And I don't think they'd be good or bad choices. And they're, I don't actually know what the qualifications. Anyway.
I don't. But anyway, but
if you go to our website, you probably get some more information on
it. If you go to moneymatters.com, the marketing people put that stuff up there.
And both myself.
Financial advisors.
We don't know anything about marketing. Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors.
Yeah, not marketing.
We spend our, you know, most people have heard this. I'm going to talk about it real quick. Not marketing. Both Pat and myself spend a little time on marketing. This is the radio program, for crying out loud. But our advisors, our firm is pretty unique. And I normally don't give, we normally don't give plugs for our firm. But this is a big deal.
It's
a distinction.
Yes.
Whether or not this is what helped us get on the Financial Times 300.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time to be talking about it, but go ahead.
I'm going to anyway.
It is both our show.
Most financial advisors spend a good chunk of their time, if not the majority of their time, trying to win new clients.
Get people to visit with them. And that includes
big firms. Firms will hire brokers and financial advisors away from other firms if they can attract clients and bring clients in. If they can wine and dine people, rain make, whatever you want to call it, right? It's about getting the client. That's where these firms will pay a lot of money for brokers that can attract clients.
So,
and what we found, there are some people that are in this industry that are phenomenal financial advisors. They understand the trade really well. They're great at communicating with people. They're great at being empathetic, understanding people's needs, figuring out what the problems are, offering solutions, but they aren't great marketers. They're not rainmakers. And unfortunately, our industry acts like it's 1975 in the way that it's designed, where Wall Street firms hire brokers to go out and generate business. And the people that are the top brokers out there
are the best rainmakers.
That's it, period. They're the top paid. They're the big shots. Maybe not
the best.
They may
not be the best advisor.
That's right. At Hanson McLean, I mean, we normally don't like giving a lot of plugs about our firm, but I'm doing it anyway. Our advisors, we find advisors that are great financial advisors. The firm is responsible for generating new clients, not the advisors. They're not paid to go out and wine and dine people. They're not paid to go out and
bring
generate
golfing.
The majority of their incomes comes from a salary base. I don't think the CFP board likes us mentioning salary, so I can't call them salaried advisors, although that's all what it seems to look like to us. And then they do receive some small compensation for other things, but the majority is based upon them being here.
And giving good advice.
We hire them, okay. We pay them a salary.
All right. So you get that off your chest?
So I'm just saying, it makes a difference.
It does make a difference, yes. But that's not why they tuned into the show. People tune in the show because they want to have their questions answered. They understand the markets. They want to understand their retirement. They want to understand financial security.
They might want to hear about.
That's why they didn't tune into the show to hear about
job.
The compensation program that we've put together for some of the highest quality advisors in America.
I think they want to hear about the compensation.
If you'd like to join the show.
And they probably want to hear about the process that we go through to determine compensation.
If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSEN, that's 888-242-6766 to join the show. Right. And we will get you on the air. Or if you'd like, you could visit us at moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com.
So it is a strange investment environment right now.
It's a difficult investment
environment. You know, it's funny. A couple weeks ago, I talked to... I was actually calling, soliciting some money for a charity. He's a very wealthy individual, very charitable. And he says, oh, you must be happy right now, Scott. I said, why is that? Well, the stock market's up. This is when the market's in. And I said to him, I'll call him Bill. I said, Bill, I said, I don't get excited when the market's up, particularly when the market is going higher and earnings are going lower. I like earnings to go. I don't care about the stock price. I want to see earnings.
Why? Why would you say that? Why would you say that?
Because it's true.
Because over time, the price of stocks,
price of any asset,
driven by the underlying earnings.
Think about it this way. Let's say you own a rental home on the corner of 4th and High Street. Okay? The rental home generates $1,000 a month in rent.
Okay.
And let's say the home sells for $200,000.
Okay.
Would you be more excited if A, rents increased to $2,000 a month, or the property, let's say rents declined a bit, but the property value went up in price?
You would be happier if the rents increased.
Yes.
Because over time, the value of the property, over time, a long period of time, the value of the property is predicated on the income it generates.
Yes. For example, we see right now in San Francisco, property values are going through the roof. Manhattan, property values. London had that until Brexit, but that's another story. But so we see property values going up, both commercial as well as residential, because of increased rents, because of increased demand. So we got all these technology companies that have been going from Silicon Valley to
San
Francisco.
Stock prices...
So we're in an era right now where we have earnings of the typical company in the S&P 500 has declined.
Fallen.
And their price of the stock has gone up.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense. So
how could anyone be happy about that?
Well, so what's driving that?
Well, it's lack of alternatives.
Low yields on fixed income investing.
Maybe. Fear of overseas.
That's
fear of being in Europe. Fear of the emerging markets, fear of Brazil.
Fear of high yield bonds, all kinds of things.
It's like, where am I going to put my money? So people put it into the stock
market. One of the reasons they do that is 60% of the stocks in the S&P 500, 60% of the stock in the S&P 500, their dividends are now higher than what you could get if you invested in a 10-year U.S. Treasury.
The dividends are actually quite attractive relative to...
About about 1.5%, right around there. So 60% of the stocks in the S&P 500 pay more than you would get if you bought an ultra-safe 10-year U.S. Treasury backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
The fact is, they are not the same.
They are absolutely not the same. And these stocks actually could be considered a little bit pricey because if you look at their forward earnings projections... Of the S&P 500, what we're looking at is approximately 17.2%. 17.2.
17 times earnings.
17 times earnings.
Yes. Now, here's what's even more interesting. If you look this year, investors have been plowing money into these so-called low volatility funds, mostly exchange-traded funds. They act like mutual funds, slightly different, ETFs. Low volatility. These invest in companies that have historically had less volatility. Companies like General Mills, Johnson & Johnson, AT&T, things that have been around a long time, right?
And why do they have less volatilities? They have pretty consistent dividend payments.
Yes, so they've had less volatility. But here's the thing. As investors have plowed money in, what's happened to the price?
It's gone up.
It's gone up. And so other investors look at it and say, oh, look at this. Low volatility and good performance.
Or maybe just good performance.
Why didn't I buy that?
Which would increase the volatility.
What's happened, it's driven it higher. But what's interesting right now is that the price-earnings ratio of these low volatility companies are roughly 30% higher than the core S&P 500 ETF.
So you question whether you should care much about the volatility because you're paying a big premium.
You're paying
for the low volatility.
Almost 30% more. I don't think this story, this story's not going to end well.
But it sells to the average investor. The investment advisors can sell this story.
Oh, look at this. We're going to get low volatility and great returns, higher dividends, lower volatility.
But you
look at the track record on this.
They're not going to say, oh, by the way, you're paying about 30% more for this low volatility.
There was a gentleman, a representative from a company in here a few weeks ago, giving a presentation on some product. And he said, he gave us the rate of return year to date for this particular fund. And I interrupt them in front of a group of all of our advisors. I might have not have been the kindest about it, but I said, why is that relevant? It wasn't relevant at all. But he was touting it because I was supposed to be impressed that what the year-to-date return had been, which was totally irrelevant.
It was the asset class.
If anything, I'd want to buy something that was down. I don't want something that's just gone up. Why would you want to buy something that's expensive? You can buy things on sale.
So the reason these are popular... are really popular right now is these, right? Low volatility is it. People are flocking for investments with yield, and yes, it's a very, very difficult time to find it.
Do not buy into the name that is low volatility. I will stick my neck out here and say I would make a bet, a wager, that in the next 24 months, these low volatility will look anything but low volatility.
Yeah.
As money pours into it, it's the quick money too.
And it becomes more volatile.
It'll become out just as quick. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Taking the financially complex and making it simple, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
Hope everyone's having a great weekend.
I am.
This is the kind of music you like.
I like this type of music.
Pop.
Yeah, I like this.
Although my son's into 70s rock. Grateful Dead.
Oh, no. Does he have all the other bad habits that come along with listening to that
not
music?
Not that I know. Not that I know. But
anyway.
Heading up to college. He's been on a road trip with some friends throughout California.
Oh, good for him.
A couple sleeping bags in the back of his dad's Subaru.
Oh, good for him.
Yes, apparently they got it stuck in the sand at Pismo Beach and had to push it out or something, got it out.
Oh, no.
At first, I was like a little frustrated, and then I thought,
"That's not if that's the worst thing that happened."
When I was 18, I remember I had a Jeep. That's the stuff I used to do. Good drive.
You know our rule: just don't come home with anyone with a uniform on. That was the rule.
Don't come really.
Yeah, don't have the sheriff deliver you to the house, anything like that. Anything in the uniform, nurse's uniform, doctor uniform.
All right.
So, if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSEN. Yep. That's 242-6766. And if you'd like our downloads, our podcast, just go to your favorite podcast store and type in.
You probably have an iPhone.
type it, but they may not. Just go to your favorite podcast store and type in Hanson McLean, and we will deliver to you on a weekly basis. And in addition to those, I'm not done yet.
That's not all.
I'm not done yet. If you go to moneymatters.com, you can sign up to receive our weekly email, which has information regarding the markets, information regarding retirement planning, information regarding college funding, some taxes on there, estate planning. It is multifaceted. We deliver it to you every Friday evening at no charge.
Speaking of estate planning, we've got a great guest today with us.
Hoping.
We're going to talk about estate planning, death and taxes, which we always love talking about. John Pally is joining us. John is a estate planning attorney with Meisner, Joseph, and Pally. John, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, glad you're with us. And John's done some estate planning work, not only for a number of Hanson McLean clients, has also done some estate planning work for myself and some estate planning work, I believe, for you.
He did. And for my my father as well.
And
that is true. I remember.
My mother-in-law as well. Nice to
So anyway, we hold him in high regard.
Yes, no question about it. And they're Sacramento-based firm. You have a couple offices, I believe. And I think you have some other attorneys that work with you as well doing estate planning. But so and the reason we wanted you on today, John, is wasn't that many years ago when a lot of people were hit with estate taxes, right? It was a $600,000 limit. Before we had estate taxes, AB trusts were necessary to double that. Now we're at a much higher level. So I guess the question I would have is today, who needs an estate plan today?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. As the years have gone on, and as you say, it does seem like just yesterday, you could only give away $600,000 tax-free. And as the estate tax exemption has gone up, a lot of people have fallen into the false belief that they don't need an estate plan. However, put the estate taxes aside, just talk about a person dying. They, in California, for example, which is obviously where I'm based, you can only give away up to $150,000 in assets without going to probate. So again, it's not the federal estate tax system. It goes into probate. A lot of people think probate is actually worse than taxes because it's primarily attorney's fees. So I understand that. And so we want to avoid probate for people that have assets. But even people that don't have assets, or maybe they have minimal assets, but they have specific desires that they want followed. They want to give their music collection. You're talking about 70s rock. They want to give that collection of record albums to a certain person. They should have an estate plan. And then lastly, the medical directive. I just want to mention that one as well. You don't have to have any money, but you want to make sure the plugs are pulled and all of that.
You might want the plugs pulled. Like my advanced director said, if you're in a coma or something that you're not going to come out of. So you mentioned this record collection. How common is it on when people do an estate plans, whether it's a will or a trust, are they getting that specific on their assets?
You know, a lot of people, a lot of people do have specific wishes. I hate to be sexist, but I would say a lot of the women have certain jewelry items they want to specify. A lot of guys have guns they want to specify.
Oh.
I hear those two items all the time. They have specific wishes. They have very specific wishes. And so we will incorporate that into the estate plan. I mentioned music. You know, there's just different things that click for certain people. It's not always worth a lot of money. Sometimes it is. But it might have sentimental value. It might be an item that people might fight about. So getting it in writing can sometimes avoid problems down the road.
And John, how many I'm sure you have hundreds, if not thousands, of clients. As a percentage, just ballpark this, what is the percentage of people that actually name a charity or have a charitable intent in their estate plan?
Well, unfortunately, it's a pretty low percentage. I've been fairly involved with the plan giving community, and certainly that's a desire of mine to get more people to give to charity, but most people's charities start at home, I guess they would say. A lot of people give smaller amounts to charity, maybe 5 or 10%, or specific dollar amounts, $5,000, $10,000. And we sometimes see people who will name charities as the last beneficiary if the, you know, everyone in the family was not available.
Got it.
Kind of thing.
Got
yeah.
So here's my question. So it wasn't that long ago. It was $600,000 was the exemption. People would have a trust that was set up to create a bypass or an AB provision. Today, the limits are what, about $5.5 million each?
Definitely, yeah. And the
something
law
like
is feeling more and more permanent. I mean, it was just a few years ago that the government came up with the permanent tax law change, moving it to that 5.5, doubled with the portability. So you're basically at $11 million tax free. I mean, not too many of us have to worry about that.
And how often do you still see trusts out there that were written with an AB provision that where it's mandatory?
Yeah, definitely. So the AB
this is the issue that I think that we see a lot with our clients. They have these old trusts sitting around,
and the bypass has to be funded.
Yes.
When it no longer
they don't
makes sense.
Their estate's not more than $5.5 million.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. We really encourage people that have trusts that have those AB provisions to get them reviewed by an attorney, because it might not be necessary. It's a lot of extra paperwork after death. It can create a lot of complexity. On the other hand, we do still implement mandatory AB trusts for a lot of blended families, because people want to ensure that their wishes ultimately get followed after the second spouse's death. So employing that AB split at the first death enables them to provide for their spouse, but still have the money come back to their side of the family when that spouse dies. Does that make sense?
That AB is essentially when the first spouse passed away, saying, look, a chunk of money is going to be set aside. The surviving spouse could have some income from it, but the bulk of the assets are going to go based upon the wishes of the deceased person.
So people are inadvertently disinherited.
Exactly. Well, and what we see a lot of, I hate to say it, but a lot of times, let's say you have a Brady Bunch. You know, they each have three kids. They have a happy marriage.
I grew up in that sort of thing, yeah.
So you're right. A lot of people. I mean, it's very common. And
I grew up as,
the first spouse... You lived in
Pat's
the
looking,
bunch
Pat's
house,
looking at me like
right?
I'm crazy. I had three steps.
I remember. I was trying to remember where they are now.
Yeah, who knows now.
So, John, I've got a couple questions.
No, but he's continue on, John.
I got a question.
Let me just,
John, finish.
Let me finish.
Okay.
I just want to, because this is an important point. There's a lot of people out there that have this problem. That first spouse has died, and if the assets don't get split into that AB trust, the other spouse's kids, as years go on, they sort of encourage that their parent to forget that old step, sibling. Let's give it all to your family, and then they can amend the whole trust. Whereas if they had kept that mandatory AB trust, it would make it significantly harder.
You know, John.
So, anyway, sorry.
We've seen. I mean, I could have some pictures. I've seen that exact same thing.
Give us the worst nightmare scenario you've ever worked on. That's what I want to know.
Oh gosh.
Like, you don't have to name names. Just like, give us all the dirt.
You know, I could probably write a pretty good book. And I can't think of a specific one. But a lot of times, it could be smaller cases where people are. I remember this one case. People were fighting about the grandparents' milk bottle collection. They had owned a dairy in the Land Park area of Sacramento way 50 years ago. And, if you sold one milk bottle from this dairy on eBay, it might be worth $100, right? So if you have a barn with 1,000 or 5,000 milk bottles, that must be worth whatever, right?
Oh.
5,000 times 100.
Yeah, well, not quite.
The second bottle... Correct.
They affected their own prices. It would take about 50 years to distribute there and keep the prices level. That wasn't the story I was looking
fight.
For, John. I was looking
Tell
for
me what you want.
I wanted some dirt. I wanted the siblings fighting the whole bit.
Oh yeah. The fighting all the time. It starts the day mom and dad die. Someone goes into the house. This is extremely common. They take everything of value, everything of sentimental value. I mean, it's gone.
Oh, so
and
how often does that happen?
So we're going to go to a break in a second, but I'd like you to walk us through what happens as soon as mom and dad die, what you should do, because I hear it all the time. But we can never know the truth because we're only hearing it one side of the party. So I don't know whether... Anyway, so
we're taking a quick break.
And then we're going to you're going to share the dirt with us after this.
Hold on 2 seconds. This is Hanson McLean. We'll be right back.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call
at
888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it?
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.
To one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean here with you, and glad you're with us. We've got John Pally, estate planning attorney. John's with the firm Meisner, Joseph, and Pally. He's been practicing estate law for...
John, I have a quick question off the subject. How did they determine in what order the name shows up on the marquee? I know at Hanson McLean we flipped a coin. Did you have a technical process like that as well?
You know, I think it's strictly by age at my firm.
Okay.
So I'm good for a while right now in position three.
Okay.
Right. So you actually, it was interesting when you said what oftentimes mom and dad die, one of the children goes in, empties the house of the valuables. How common is that? And how does someone prevent that from happening?
Yeah. So and this is common. And people of all economic means, someone has died, they're emotional, and poor decisions can be made. It is extremely common. It's hard officially, you're really not supposed to take anything out of that house. So as an attorney, I certainly can't give that advice to a client. On the other hand, a prospective client recently, he feels his sister is extremely dishonest, and he said, the day my dad dies, I'm back in a U-Haul up to the truck, or up to the house, pardon me. And I, you know, I couldn't, he hasn't hired me yet, so I couldn't tell him not to. I told him it probably wasn't the right thing to do, legally speaking. But from a practical standpoint, if he's truly safeguarding those items, and here's the key, plans to actually give them back into the probate estate so they do get split correctly, I suppose ultimately that's the right thing. The problem is a lot of people, once they take those things, they're never found again, and it's sad.
And John, what is sad is that the number of families that are split permanently because after a death of a parent, the brother and sister that otherwise would seem reasonable, just they go at each other, and it takes years and years and years to heal those wounds.
Yeah, it is. I was an only child, so I don't fully get it, but I think I always say it stems from maybe when they were 5 years old and they had a fight, or, the one kid was, the family favorite or whatever it was, and those things come back 50 years later, and, people fight, and a lot of times we see them never talk again.
Yeah.
Sometimes fighting over a lot of money, sometimes fighting over very little money, sometimes fighting over the milk bottles, like I said. It's, you just never know.
So, obviously, we're all going to die. Roughly half of us from the studies I've seen die without any sort of a will or trust in place, right? Those that have done some estate planning, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see?
Sure. The biggest thing I see, the far biggest, is people, they get a living trust, which is great. In most states in our country, a living trust is important. It avoids probate, carries out your wishes after death. The attorney or whoever prepares it puts it in a fancy faux leather binder, and then the people never take steps to get their assets transferred into the trust. We call that trust funding. It is not done by a lot of people. That is, maybe they get initially their assets in the trust, and then as years go on, they forget about the trust, And so they have a hollow trust. They have a faux leather binder of paper in a lot of instances.
All right, so let's take a situation like that, because I think that's the majority of people, right? They never finished transferring everything in there. They've left a car out, or maybe the car was in there. They bought a new car. They didn't get that. They might have an RV. They have some assets. Somebody passes away, last survivor passes away with a living trust, and there's assets, there's a bank account, whatever, outside the trust. What happens? How does that get put back inside the trust, or does it?
Yeah. Well, usually we can get it put back into the trust. And so that's the good news. People have, as you know, they have a pour-over will, typically, and the pour-over will says, put it all into the trust.
Okay, so you state, really quick, you state that, and then you take somebody, for example, my age, around age 50, and I think, by the time I die, most likely these assets are going to be a lot different than they are today. I know I should get that transfer, but the pour-over will is going to pour it over. So what's the problem with that?
You're still going to go through probate court. And so you're still going to spend money. Let's say, for example, you have $200,000 out of your living trust, and one of these days I'm going to get that in there. That's probably between attorney's fees and court costs. That could easily be $9,000 to get it probated and put into the trust. Whereas for you to do it while you're alive is a hassle. You maybe got to fill out a couple forms, but it's going to be a lot simpler than the probate process.
So the most common thing is
the biggest problem.
People not having everything. What are some other common mistakes in the estate planning
process? You know, the thing, probably two other issues that I see the most of. One is people fail to, they don't do a full estate plan. So they don't factor in life insurance, IRAs, 401ks, all of those other assets that are outside of the trust into a cohesive estate plan to make sure that the assets get distributed properly. So you guys do a lot of work in the retirement community with IRAs. It's extremely important to make sure that those beneficiaries are set up properly. So that's probably the second
thing. When you say beneficiaries set up properly, that might mean that the trust is a beneficiary, and it might mean that the trust is not a beneficiary, correct?
On the IRAs or 401ks.
Exactly. We'll do a full show another week on that one. But it's a loaded question.
That'll be an exciting one. People will be waiting for that one.
Exactly. But I say
they'll skip watching Cops, and they'll be listening to this
right there. Jeez, John.
we'll make it fun. But if you have a minor, my kids are 12 and 13. It would do no good for me to name them as a beneficiary of my IRA. Because they're just going to blow it when, the day they turn 18, my son will buy video games. My daughter will buy cell phone
if you're lucky.
Covers, if I'm lucky, right? Could be worse. And so, whereas instead we can leave it in trust, the trustee can manage it, hold it until an older age, and in most cases still get that stretch, the income tax, stretch deferral that we want. So that's a loaded question.
But let's say your kids are now 33 and 35.
Yeah.
Then you might say, let's just have the kids listed as the beneficiary.
And no longer the trust on the IRA.
Exactly. And so that's when a lot of people that you typically name their spouse as the primary beneficiary, and then they put their kids as the, assuming they're responsible and all of that, name them as the contingent
beneficiary.
Because
that's one of the things that we see quite often. Someone comes in, they have some retirement plans set up, they've got adult children, you start having a conversation, oh no, my kids are responsible. I said, are there any spendthrift clauses in your trust to state that they wouldn't have the assets? Oh no, it's all going to go to them. That's like, well, then why in the world is your trust listed as the...
Why not just list them individually rather than the trust? So, John...
You were going to have one other mistake you were going to mention.
Yeah, just one more thing that I see a lot of, it hit me personally, and it's almost funny since my mom was an estate planning attorney herself. My mom passed away earlier this year. And she had, she had a few small stock positions, very small, we're $500 here, $1,000 here. She liked the dividend reinvestment and all that. And she had them properly in her living trust, but she didn't have them all at a stock brokerage house. Instead, she invested directly with the companies. Well, it's now been 4 or 5 months. I'm still filling out forms to get this money collected. Whereas if she had just put all of those stock holdings into one brokerage account, I, as the trustee, would have had immediate access and a lot less of a hassle. And obviously, it was not her intent. And, you know, her intent was to make it easy for me. And so I really encourage people to consolidate those stocks. If they have that credit union account from 30 years ago that they don't really use anymore,
yes,
close it out.
Make
and lastly,
it simple.
The bonds. You got some bonds in your safe deposit box. If they're small, cash them out. Make it easy for your family.
Yes, make it simple. So, John, before you go, I have a question. So I have family members that don't have a lot of money with minor children. And this is what I tell them, and this might make you cringe. I say to go to LegalZoom.com and do your trust or will. Preferably, you would use an attorney. Preferably, if you had the money, you would use an attorney and make sure it was perfect. But my point is, something is better than nothing. And if you have to go to LegalZoom.com and you pay the whatever, 100, 200, whatever the dollar is, it's better than nothing. Good advice? Bad advice?
You know what? I think it's potentially great advice as long as they keep it. There's two things I've seen go wrong with legal. With I don't want to name LegalZoom specifically, but you need to keep it simple. If you overcomplicate it with them, I've seen it go haywire. And then secondly, you have to make sure you execute the documents. I'm sure that properly. I'm sure LegalZoom gives explicit instructions on two witnesses for the wills, notarize the power
Got
of attorney.
It.
You need to follow those instructions.
Okay.
Because that's it. Of course, always the challenge with those, any of those, you don't know what you don't know. I mean, the benefit of working with a quality attorney like John Pally is he knows things that I wouldn't even know when to ask.
But Scott, if you have two kids and your income is modest, but you have $1 million life insurance policy, So I use John Pally. Obviously, I use estate planning attorneys, and I think the world of them as much as you can an attorney. But
real quick,
I appreciate that.
How often should someone have their estate plan reviewed?
You know, it's a good idea. I say every 5 years. I think an even bigger one though is milestones. Kids get married. Kids have
grandkids.
Kids have kids. And like we were talking about, you know, when the kids are up in that 25, 30, 35 age where they're becoming more mature, because you likely need to review the IRA beneficiaries and also potentially make your kids the successor trustees of your trust. So that, you know, in that maturity level, maybe 30-ish, whatever it is, that's a good time as well.
All right. Well, hey, John, really appreciate you being with us today. Again, John Pally of the firm Meisner, Joseph & Pally. You can find them... I don't know how you find them. Google Meisner, Joseph & Pally.
Look it up in the yellow pages.
Yeah. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, MySpace. Big MySpace guy, by the way. Anyway, thanks so much for being with us, John. We appreciate it. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I went down
to the crossroads. Welcome back to Hanson McLean. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean. And the podcast, easy to use, free of charge. You heard the young man, old man, talk about it?
Some man.
The marketing department would like us to tell you about the podcast.
Yes.
You can listen at your leisure.
I get it each week.
Do you?
I don't, to be honest, I don't listen to it
because I
pretty much know everything that's going to be discussed. You can sign up so it gets delivered automatically each week to your iPhone or your Android or whatever.
My son and a number of his college friends that are studying business subscribe to our podcast.
Is that right?
They were telling me about it, yeah.
I was reading an article, maybe it was in the journal. There are smartphones that are like $100.
Okay.
Made in China. They're missing a few features, but they're cheap. And this article was talking about when these would make sense as an alternative. Maybe if you're traveling a lot. Don't want to have your iPhone because iPhones are what, $700-$800.
Oh.
But if you look at the sales numbers.
For smartphones.
Yeah, I mean.
They're falling.
Yes. And I started thinking about my own. I've had my own. I don't have the latest version of the iPhone.
Because they're good enough.
Even my case is falling apart. My wife says, your case looks terrible. And I'm like, what do I care? It works. I mean, it's functional. It slides in my pocket. And
actually, my case, I use a Mophie battery case. Love it. Absolutely love it.
It's all huge, though.
It is huge, but it carries it's a battery built in, so it holds like twice as much charge when you use
How much charge do you need? You're always on the go. Pat's a busy man. Always got text to return. Following calls to make my extra battery. I'm at 72%.
All right. So this is a financial show where people actually call in and ask questions about money.
See that picture?
Is a very nice picture. But this is the radio.
I know. People can't see the...
It's a radio show. 888-2-HANSEN if you'd like to join the show. 888-242-6766. And as always, you can subscribe to our weekly email that we deliver to you. Chock full of content by going to moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com.
And right now, let's go to San Jose, talk to Ondine. Ondine, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, you are. This is she.
Hi.
I am doing fine. Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, good. Thanks for joining us today. How can we help
you? I would like to know, I am going to be 67 next month, and I'm concerned about required minimum distribution when I hit 70 and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now's a good time to be thinking about it, by
the way. That is a good... actually, a lot of people don't call till they're 70, and the planning chances that they had were sacrificed. So the earlier you actually start thinking about required minimum distributions, the better off you are. So let's ask a couple questions about you.
Okay.
How much is the account balance in the IRA or 401k or wherever it is? Which one is it? Is it an IRA or 401k?
It's a traditional IRA. I rolled it over when I retired a couple of years ago, and it's $325,000 there now.
Okay. And what's your income, including Social Security, the family income to you right now?
Why did I know you were going to do that?
Just a ballpark.
It's close to $5,000 a month.
Okay.
That's I'm going to be general.
And are you married?
No.
Okay.
Divorced.
And are you taking any income from your IRA today?
No.
Okay. So here's how the law works. When you reach age 70 and a half, and I don't know where the half year came from. I mean, it's thank you, Congress. But when you reach age 70 and a half, you must start taking some distributions from all of your retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, 457s. And you must start taking a distribution no later than the April 1st, not 15, but April 1st, following the year in which you reach age 70 and a half. So in 3 years from now, when you're 70 and a half, the year after that, you must have distributions taken no later than April the 1st. And it's a funny formula that they calculate this on. It used to be based upon your life expectancy, which kind of makes sense. And really the idea behind this is the government says, look, these are tax-deferred dollars. We haven't received our share of revenue on these yet. So when you reach some age, we want you to start slowly withdrawing them, and we'll let it last over your life expectancy. And the way this would work is the older you got, the longer your life expectancy would be, right? So if you reach age 90, your life expectancy is not zero because you've lived that long. You still have some life expectancy. And then people used to start playing some games with it, and they say, well, I'm going to do a joint life expectancy between me and my one-year-old grandson.
Because it was based on the life expectancy of you and the beneficiary.
And then they said, no, you can't stretch it out that long. And they said, look, we'll allow you to do as much as 10 years difference. That's about all you're going to do. Unless you have a spouse that's younger than that, then we'll allow a joint life expectancy.
Which basically, you know,
maybe I'm giving you too much background, but I'm just giving a little background. Yeah. Then a number of years ago, one day the Treasury Department comes out and says, oh, by the way, we're issuing some new guidelines. We're going to take that table that was between your life expectancy and someone 10 years younger. That is the new formula we're going to base everything on. So essentially, at 70 and a half, you've got to start taking distributions based upon your life expectancy at age 70 and assuming it was a joint life expectancy with someone age 60, as crazy as that sounds.
So you divide that account by 26, essentially. And that
about 3.5% first year.
And so your account, your distribution, required minimum distribution, if it was the account today, would be about $10,000.
But every year, it gets more and more.
So here's the planning opportunity. is you take a look to see what your required minimum distribution is, and you project what tax rate you're going to pay at that point in time. And then you come back and you say, hey, what's the tax rate going to be if I took it out today and converted it to a Roth IRA and actually paid taxes on it early rather than wait for the required minimum distribution? I suspect, do you have a financial advisor?
He takes care of the funds, but we haven't really talked about this because I don't know how his tax understanding is, because that is really the big issue here. If I died at 71, my beneficiary will then have to be worrying about the distribution and the taxes.
Well, so
I don't want to do that to them.
Okay.
Well, actually, your beneficiary would have a pretty good planning opportunity. So let's say you died at age 71.
Okay.
Or let's say you died today. Right? You died today. Your beneficiary can inherit this IRA and then take the distributions and stretch the distributions based upon their own life expectancy.
So actually have a less required minimum distribution than you do today.
Oh.
But frankly, I would certainly hope your financial advisor has good working knowledge on tax law, because when taxes go from anywhere from 15% federal to 39.6% federal, plus another 3.8% for the Affordable Care Act, plus the state of California, which could be another 13.1. When you're looking at over half of your any investment earnings going to taxes, it is a huge factor when it comes to investing, the tax ramifications, whether it's on money held outside of an IRA or inside of an IRA.
So if you were a client,
I could not imagine your advisor not having a great working knowledge on this.
So just as an example,
particularly if they're a certified financial planner.
If with the clients of our firm, we'd look at this and say maybe it makes sense to actually fund a Roth IRA.
Do some conversion today.
To convert today.
You just need to run the numbers.
Yeah, based upon your marginal tax rate.
Yeah, get
a how much room is it versus waiting till age 70 and a half and what that looks like.
Undine, we would strongly recommend you get with your financial advisor and say, I want to look at doing some proper planning with my IRA to see if it makes sense for us to start taking some distributions today and converting that to a Roth, or just waiting until age 70 and a half.
And it doesn't, if they have the base knowledge, it's not that complicated.
And if they don't, find the new advisor.
Yeah, and if they don't, fire them.
All right, then. So if I want to make sure I understand. So if I go call him and say, let's talk about it. Okay, as of next week, I need you to take, based on my marginal tax rate, I want you to convert, say, $10,000 into...
No. We want to figure out if it makes sense to do any conversion.
If it makes sense to do it or not. And it depends.
The way the tax rates work, the tax bracket goes from 15%, takes a jump to 25%, the federal tax bracket. That's a 10% differential. So if there's still room in your 15% tax bracket, that's what you want to take advantage of. That's what you want to exploit.
The reason we can't answer the question on the air is we're not looking at your tax return. So
all you're doing is
some what if scenarios with your taxes, and you're saying what if. And determining whether it makes sense to either do $3,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 from the IRA to a Roth IRA now. If it was age 70 and a half, you missed that opportunity.
That boat
has sailed. Oh, and you may have missed opportunity because you rolled this thing over 4 years ago. So you might go through this thing and then become
frustrated that you haven't done some of this the last few years.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Now, in saying all that, here's what we find. That's in a perfect world where people are 100% rational and make rational decisions about everything. When I come to you and say, we're going to convert this money from an IRA to a Roth IRA, and you don't really have to do it, but you're going to have to pay taxes on it of state and federal right now of $3,000.
Sometimes people say, forget that.
Some people say, forget that. And we say, well, if you wait, you might have to pay taxes on it of $4,000 or $5,000. Yeah, but you may be rational.
Okay.
You may be rational. All righty.
You're going to have to pay it one way or the other.
You want to pay less if you can.
You want to pay the least amount possible.
The least amount, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, Andy, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate your
call. Thank you so much. Now I know I've got a better idea of where I'm going, and I appreciate both of you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank
you know, Pat, it just reminds me of a client that I was working with that had seven-figure IRA in mid-60s, had other assets as well, wasn't touching it. wasn't planning on touching it at age 70 and a half, knew the required minimum distributions were coming in. I had talked about Roth conversions. They didn't want to do a Roth conversion at all. They were in a 15% tax bracket, very modest.
Should have done some.
They didn't want to do it. They came in at eight tax time with checks to put into it for a deductible IRA contribution. I said, why are you doing this? They said, well, we just got back from doing our taxes. Our CPA said this would save us X dollars on taxes. I said, you realize in 4 years from now, you're going to be 70 and a half. We're going to have to take these dollars right back out. And I said, let's go through the numbers again. And I showed them again. I said, look, you're going to take a tax deduction today at 15%. And 4 years from now, you're going to take a withdrawal and you'll be at 25%. Now, granted, the tax laws can change some.
They're not going to change that dramatically.
Yeah. So I actually convinced them not to make the deductible contribution.
And to convert?
And to convert. He said, I needed to think about the conversion. He did come in before December 31st. We did do some conversion. Anyway, that music means we're out of time. We are here every week on this same station, Hanson McLean's Money Matters. You can also get a podcast of this program at moneymatters.com or just go to iTunes, search Hanson McLean. You'll find us. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. Again, this has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Hey, if you're listening to our show on podcast and you'd like to be a caller into the show, don't hesitate to give us a call.
That's right.
888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You got it?
Yeah, we'll take your call. We record sometimes during the week, so we'd love to take your call.